blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vafidez.
Hello, everybody. What's going on? We are live tonight. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, episode number 28, right here at the one, the only, the Jersey Shore. And speaking of the Jersey Shore, we have a very, very, very special guest with us tonight, coming straight from the Jersey Shore. You may know him as Nova. You may know him as Simon Dean. I know him as Mr. Mike Bucci. How you doing tonight, Mike?
Buddy, what's up, man? It's a pleasure to be on. Actually, I'm speaking to you right now from Louisville, Kentucky. That's where I spend most of my time down here. Was born and raised in New Jersey. It's always going to be home right there in Toms River, New Jersey. Hope everybody's recovering from Sandy. Things are right on schedule, I hope. But it's a pleasure to be on. So,
thank you. Things are going really well with Hurricane Sandy. I was over in Seaside Heights over the weekend for the St. Patrick's Day Parade, and it was great to see so many people back in that town.
Well, I saw they broke ground, and I spoke to some friends and people out of there, and looks like they're all cylinders go trying to get everything ready for Memorial Day weekend. So, you know, it's still a good 2 months away, so I think they should have the majority of it then, I hope. So we'll see. I hope so.
Absolutely. The pilings are in, and it's ready to go. But tonight we're going to talk about a few things. You know, we're going to have you for about 20 minutes, and I know you're coming back to Jersey for WrestleMania weekend. You'll be performing at Pro Wrestling Syndicate. That's a company that we get behind, that we really love. We're actually going to be there on Thursday night that weekend, and we'll be filming a Pro Wrestling Powerhouse TV episode. We've got full permission from Mr. Eric Pleska, and it's going to be a great time. But you're making your return to the ring, and it's kind of rare for you to actually get back inside the ring nowadays. And this leads me to my first question. How important is it for professional wrestlers to have, like, a fallback plan, something else to do if their career comes to an end?
Well, I think it's everything. You know, I have a degree in mathematics, a few weeks away from getting my bachelor's in management with a concentration in finance. I think you always have to have something outside of wrestling, especially in today's marketplace, with only one place left. And that's not a discount on TNA, but there's only a few guys there that can make really good money. The rest are, I don't know how they do it. You have to have something else. I think careers are shorter today through injury and just through attrition. It's very hard to leave one company and then reinvent yourself to go somewhere else or vice versa. It just seems that the guys are in a less amount of time today. So, you know, 22 or 23 or 24-year-old becomes 31, 32, 33 really quick. And if you're not doing something during that meantime, you know, you're not making a ton of money by the time you're done and shown the door because creative has nothing for you, then in essence, you could have spent 5 or 6 years of your life making enough money to pay your bills and kind of get through it day to day, but you also have a six-year window, I think, that is closed, because you necessarily can't go and put on a resume that you wrestled for WWE and then go work in a company somewhere. It's almost impossible, you know? So you have to do something in that window to prepare yourself for life outside of it, because everyone will be fired. There's only a few guys who are ever going to go an entire WWE career and then when it's done, be able to make money by being themselves. I mean, you can hit the indie circuit for a little while. You can do some indies and get some dates and some appearance at conventions every now and then, but surely after 6 months to a year, 2 years the most, unless you're like a bigger name, that's going to dry up. You know, why is the promoter going to pay a name and maybe 800 the first time he goes, and then it's going to be 6 and then 5 and then 4, and it's just not cost effective. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of guys who I was in WWE with when I was there 2004, 5, 6 and all that, and these guys still, like today, they don't really have jobs, a lot of them. They just kind of exist being them. I don't know how they do
it. Yeah,
but
exactly.
I'd go out of my mind, number one, with boredom. And I've always wanted to be as successful or more successful outside of wrestling than it was in it. So it can be done. You just have to want to do it.
And you're in the process of doing that. It's pretty funny how I connected with you, because my mother actually from Toms River. She's actually born in Brooklyn, lived in Toms River, moved out to Kentucky, and actually works for the same company you do. And she's the one told me to reach out, and I'm kind of glad that I did.
Yeah, I mean, I like to hope that today, you know, I was always good to the boys my whole career, always try to help a lot of guys out. And I've been contacted by a number of guys over the years, especially the last several years, with how, how they can get started with going on the right road to college or degree or continuing ed or help with job placement or just anything at all. Because I think a lot of guys realize now, hey, you know, you're a guy, a 20-something-year-old kid, and you go to WB Developmental, odds are you're going to be making about $500 a week. So if you're there for, let's say, 2-3 years, and you could make $500, you're talking like $30,000, $35,000 a year, if that. And that's going to pay your apartment bills and to feed you. If you get a shot to go to the main roster, you're not guaranteed to blow the world up. I mean, you might get on the main roster and be there again 2 or 3 years before they do anything with you. Only a select few are plucked and then put up there and they do something with them right off the bat. So, and if you get up there and don't get over or something happens, they get rid of you again. So you could conceivably have been in the company for 5-6 years and made really nothing. But again, if you don't have something outside of that going on, you went from being 25 years old, now you're 32 years old, and you have nothing. All you're going to do is try. And when people usually get released in bunches, so when those guys all get released at one time, there's 7 or 8 new names on the indies, and they're just going to cut each other's throat to see how they can get booked from so-and-so, you know?
Yeah, it overflows that market. Exactly. That market gets completely flooded.
It totally does. And I've preached, even when I ran developmental, I said, guys, please have something to do outside of this because you're all going to get fired one day or you're going to want to quit or walk away. I mean, I've never seen a time in over the last 2 years, I've never seen more people walk away from WWE ever than they do now.
Right.
You know, most of them go crawl, you know, hey, I want to come back or do this or that. But, man, it should be nice to walk away and just go do something else. You know, it's not the end all be all. It's not. I mean, people want to tell you that. And I think that's something that happens to a lot of people when they go to WB. They get caught in that mindset that this is it. You live in a bubble, and it really is. It's intoxicating to drink that Kool-Aid, so to speak, and truly believe that that is it in the world. But nothing can be further from the truth. So.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned before reinventing your character, and that is something that you did extremely well. Now, I'll always remember you as Nova because I was a big-time ECW fan. But when you made your way to WWE, you showed up as Simon Dean, which to me was one of the, I would say, like one of the more innovative characters of the time because it was just, I felt like you executed it so well, and it just seemed to work. Just the heel heat was great and everything. So just tell us a little bit about that Simon Dean character and how that came about.
When I left WWE, or ECW in 2001, I floated around the indies for about a year. I was going out to UPW, thanks to Rick Bassman for that. I went to England, Germany, Japan, Mexico, everywhere. But I always stayed in contact with people in WWE. I was in contact with, I mean, not a lot of people know this, but I was actually in contact with people with WWE when I was still in ECW. The last 6 months ECW was around. I got a few phone calls from WWE and WCW. And I remained good relationships with them, with Jim Ross, and there was guys that were trying to get me on board. And so I eventually got signed in 2002, moved down here to Louisville. And from the day I walked in the place, Jim Cornette and Danny Davis and the guys at OVW treated me great. I created Simon Dean 100% on my own, went to Vince and those guys with it. And after about a year and a half of being down here, I pitched it to him and, you know, off to the races, man. It was just I always wanted to do something like that. And it was a complete, you know, deviation from being Nova. But I loved it. It was an extension of who I really am. The whole thing was mine. The concept of riding the Segway to the ring, the gym bag, the outfit, all of the promos. I never had anybody write anything for me. You know, it was just show up and just be myself and get it done.
That's what it's all about. They always say the best wrestling characters are extensions of yourself. And
I agree,
with
100%.
That, yeah, exactly. With that character, you know, you said it's an extension of yourself. And one thing that I always try to really push to our fan base is the benefits of physical fitness. Now, I'm in the gym all the time. I try to keep in the best possible shape. And I always ask our guests on the show if you have any, like, your best fitness tip for wrestling fans out there. Because you've seen a lot lot of the standard wrestling fans, and a lot of, you know, some of them aren't in the greatest of shape and could use a little bit of push in the right direction. So what's your fitness regimen, and what's your best advice you'd give to our fans?
Best advice I would give them is just know when. Think of what Lance Storm used to always say is whenever Lance Storm ate something, he would, and I remember this, Lance would think what he was going to be doing over the next 3 or 4 hours. So when you're a fan or anybody, if you're eating something, you say to yourself, what am I doing for the next 3 or 4 hours before I eat this? Because if you're going to sit there and watch TV for 4 hours, it might behoove you not to really eat a whole pizza. But, you know, if you're going to bed at night, I probably wouldn't eat a cheeseburger. But, yeah, if you say to yourself, what am I going to do? What am I going to be doing for the next 3 to 4 hours? When's my next meal coming? And to eat frequently, too. And just some type of exercise regime, too. I mean, you can't, if you're doing nothing now and you do something, no matter what it is, 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day, 20, you're certainly going to get some kind of results from it. And a diet is 24 hours a day. Working out is about 45 minutes a day. So I don't see how you can do terribly for 23 hours and 15 minutes on something and expect to get results that you're only putting 45 minutes into. So that's a big mistake people make.
And you have to get on the assignment system, that's for sure.
Well, believe it or not, we had that ready to go. I mean, that was my plan all along. I wanted to be a heel and get over. And, you know, I remember talking about with Shawn Michaels one day before TV, and Shawn said to me, he goes, I see this character being a huge babyface one day. And I already had the dollar signs in my eyes. I had it ready to go, man. I had people ready to do a fitness video. I had ideas for it, a workout regime, a diet plan. I would have done all of it because I wanted to make a real Simon system. You know, when I see the DDP yoga now and, you know, John Morrison put something out there, you know, Stevie was trying to put something out, you know, they're all doing it independently, of course. I just remember saying to myself, this is a can't miss. I mean, the WB had IcoPro years ago, and now we have someone on the roster. I mean, I had visions, seriously, of, like, going to schools and doing mass workouts with kids and physical fitness and that whole deal, man. I mean, I thought for sure it would have worked, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I definitely think it would have worked for sure. Now, one match that I'll never forget is, and I was there live, and I'm sure a lot of people didn't see it, is you wrestled Eddie Guerrero in 2002 in South Tom Zimmer.
In Tom Zimmer.
Yeah, yep. The old Shore Sports Arena.
Phoenix Championship Wrestling, yeah.
Exactly, and I was there. I was in high school. I was a junior in high school, and my buddy was saying, yo, Eddie Guerrero is going to be at the sports arena. You got to come check it out. And I said, who is he wrestling? He told me Nova, and I was there in a heartbeat. And I remember there was a bunch of great young talent there. I know Kazarian was there, who's your former tag team partner, who's
yep.
made a big name for himself in TNA. But what are your memories of that match with Eddie Guerrero and of Eddie Guerrero in general?
Phoenix was ahead of its time. Phoenix started with Donnie B and our next-door neighbor Sean at the time. They wanted to run wrestling shows in New Jersey when ECW went under, and there was a void. There was Dennis Carluzzo wasn't running anymore either. And there was a couple of carny hucksters out there, but they meant nothing. Donnie B was the premier promoter in Jersey for about 2 years. Nobody even touched him. I mean, when he was running those shows at Shore Sports Arena, we were drawing 700-800 people a show. And everybody on the show had fun. Donnie was good to everybody. Everybody got paid. There was no nonsense. You never heard any BS. We all went to Rivoli's after the shows. Tony Rivoli was the sponsor of the show. It was great. And when I knew they were bringing Eddie in, Eddie was in between WWE at the time. And I remember being nervous for the match. Actually, the biggest thing I remember out of it was me arguing, and you're going to laugh at this, was me arguing with Eddie Guerrero before the match for hours ahead of time because he wanted to put me over in my hometown, and I refused to do it. I would not beat him, and he could. I just kept saying, Eddie, I am not pinning you in this match because he's like, you know, he knew me from the ECW a little bit. I never met him. We only talked to him every now and then, but he was a fan of my work, and he knew I worked hard. I was a young guy, and he knew that, I guess in his mind, hey, you know, a win over him would have been fantastic, which would have been. I just couldn't bring myself to do it because I knew Eddie belonged to WWE, and, you know, he was on the indies, and it was a blessing for us just to have him there in the building, and I was honored just to wrestle him, but I wouldn't do it. And he kept telling me, I'll never forget it, he's like, you and Chris Daniels, man. And there was actually, like, 2 weeks before that, a match in Delaware where they brought Eddie in. And I remember at the time the promoter put his top guy over on Eddie, and it was nonsense because this guy wasn't that good. And I didn't think, you know, he's a nice guy, but he wasn't even in the same universe as Eddie. So Eddie told me, he's like, Chris Daniels said the same thing. I wanted to put Christopher Daniels over in Alaska, and he wouldn't do it, Nova. He wouldn't let me beat him. And I told Eddie, look, man, if I get the chance, I'm going to pull you on top of me in this match. I'm going to make you pin me. So it pertains to that. And I didn't know. We went in there with no finish. I mean, I hate to, you know, I don't know, let the cat out of the bag. But I talked to Eddie for about 5 minutes before the match, and I still had no idea what was going to happen. And there's multiple times in that match that he tried to pull me on top of him, and I tried to pull him on top of me. I mean, he's the general. He knew where that was going to go all along. But, you know, he was up with the frog splash at the end when I would have had it no other way, because I actually won by losing by just being in the ring with him. And a great guy, a true veteran, a true leader, someone who's truly missed. And I can honestly say I wish that all the veterans I had met in my career were more like Eddie. Unfortunately, most of them weren't. So
yeah.
I don't
yeah,
know how to play. And so many other guys that I can't stand or, you know, couldn't stand over the years, they're still alive.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just nature. It's how it happens. We all miss Eddie Guerrero. He was absolutely fantastic. But
yep.
Once again, you're going to be in New Jersey, back in New Jersey for PWS. You're going to be composing both characters. You're going to be Simon Dean on the Thursday night, I believe, and it's going to be some kind of open challenge. The next night, you're actually reforming your tag team, one night only, with Chris Jetty. How's that going to feel? That's going to
yeah.
be a blast from the past, huh?
Well, night one's going to be awesome. It's an open challenge. Simon Dean's up there. I get a lot of love from the Jersey fans. They know I started there. They're my people. It's the Jersey Shore. You know, I don't think I'll really get booed either night. People are entertained by Simon just as much as we're Nova. But night two is special to me. I'm very friendly with Pat and Eric, who are in charge of PWS. So I actually approached them with the idea. There have been several, you know, I guess I don't want to call them reunion shows, but ECW theme shows in the past and whatnot in other places. And I thought about a couple in the past just to pique my interest enough. But when they came up with this, I said, guys, I got a hell of an idea. What about Nova and Chetty for one night? And I knew I could get Chris out of basically retirement. Chris hasn't wrestled in probably 7 or 8 years, and him and I haven't teamed up in a decade. You know, you're not going to see the Nova and Chetty from 1995 and 1996. We'll get as close as we can, but it's against the Hurricane that night and Starman. So I'm looking for an entertaining night to have fun. And, you know, I told everybody who's in the area, if you're an ECW fan, if you were ever an ECW fan, you're crazy if you don't show up there that night. Dreamer's going to be there. New Jack's going to be there. We're going to be there for one night. I mean, there's a bunch of shows in the area that weekend. But if you're an ECW fan, there's no excuse for you not to be there on that Friday night. I mean, the main event is Jushin Liger versus John Morrison. So
that's absolutely huge. Yeah, I'll
not
be in the house for sure.
I mean,
I'll definitely be there.
Be sick.
I know a lot of our listeners are going to be there too. And I just can't wait to see you back in the ring. It's going to be absolutely awesome.
It's
going to
be awesome, man. I can't wait.
You're also carrying a WrestleCon as well, correct?
Yeah, that's Saturday morning with Eric and the crew. I'll have Simon. And all 3 nights, I'm going to have a ton of BWO stuff, tons of pictures. I actually put together a Best of Nova and Chetty DVD for sale, Volume 1 and 2. I have fans asking me for that. We're going to do autographs, all boat nights at WrestleCon. I'm coming for 3 days. I mean, I hate to leave my wife and daughter ever to leave this house to go do anything. But if I'm going to go there, if I'm going to go up to 3 days and have fun and go see the fans, and you know what? I'll be back here Sunday morning and back to work on Monday. So for those 3 days, I'll be back in the game. So I can't wait for it. It's going to be awesome, man. I love what PWS does. Kevin Matthews, Pat, Eric, all the guys up there, they were all the students. They run a great company, a great organization, and that's probably, I don't know if we're going to do anything else this year. Who even knows? But for those two shows, we're going to have a good time.
Absolutely. And I've been to the last three, and they were all fantastic. I have a great time every time I go there. And I just want to, we're just going to leave you in 1 second, but I want to get one last question. This is another question we ask every single guest. We've made a tradition. Give us a good road story.
I'll give you a really good one. Road story. Here's one really good. When the Boogeyman was part of WWE. For the first several months the Boogeyman was there, I was basically his handler inside the ring and out of it. I mean, Vince McMahon himself and Johnny were like, look, you know, because Boogeyman didn't have a license, so he couldn't drive, and they couldn't get him a rental car. And they had no faith that even if they did, even though I liked the guy, But they did not think that Marty Wright could get from point A to point B. Like, they had no faith that Marty could land in an airport, actually physically rent the car, put the key in the ignition, read the map or the GPS, and show up at a building on a certain time. I mean, it sounds insane. And then do it the next night with a hotel and all. They knew he couldn't do it. So my travel posse was me, Marty Wright, Bobby Lashley, Paul Burchill, and Sylvain Grenier. We'd get minivans and drive. So the boogeyman, he used to eat the worms and spit the worms on people. So we had Marty convinced that when he ate those worms, and sometimes he swallowed the worms and they went in his stomach. Now, we had Marty convinced that when he swallowed the worms, that he had a one-hour window of time after the show was over to get to a liquor store or anywhere and buy liquor and drink the liquor to go into his stomach and kill the eggs of the worms, or else the worms would, like, hatch in his stomach and come out and, like, kill him. So we're and every night after the show's over, we'd get in the car, and I would purposely drive by a liquor store or a 7-Eleven just and pretend I didn't see it as the clock was winding down for the 1 hour. So 1 hour we went to we're driving. There's like 5 minutes left in the window. So we pull up in front of this liquor store, and who do we see in the liquor store? We look at it and see Fit Finley and Steamboat and all those guys, and they're buying liquor for the road. Now, Marty doesn't want to go in there and buy any liquor because he doesn't want to make it look like you're drinking. You know what I mean? He doesn't want the agency to see that. So we're way down there. We're counting it down, man. We're like 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left, and those guys come walking out, and we're all ducking down to this minifan, and we're trying to hide. We wouldn't have cared, but we was part of the rib. So Marty finally goes in, and we're past the hour window. So Marty just starts drinking everything under the sun, and he's all worried about it. He can't sleep at night. I mean, the next morning he wakes up, and the eggs haven't hatched yet. I mean, it was just – it never stopped. I mean, we did it every single night to the guy. And it never
got
old.
That is awesome.
We had to get in town, and we had to go find a bait shop so he could buy the worms and bring them to the show. It's not a lie. They were real, dude. I mean, he was going to the bathroom. Forget about working out in the ring or getting better or anything like that. Marty would go to the show and start painting his face at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and clean off his worms and get him ready. So, yeah, that's how we had Bobby Lashley, if you haven't talked to him, many, many nights. And then we had conversations about Bigfoot and how Marty saw Bigfoot back in the day, and he knows it was real and all kinds. I mean, Marty is a nice guy, but he is one of the most bizarre human beings I ever met. I'm 40 years old, dude, and he's up there in the top 2 or 3 of just bizarre characters.
That's absolutely awesome, man. That's a hilarious story.
There you go.
Thanks for joining us tonight, Mike. We really appreciate it. And make sure you check out Mike Bucci at PWS. That's April 4th and 5th. And at RussellCon, April 6th. How can the fans get in touch with you? Any kind of, you got a Twitter, Facebook, anything like that?
No, I don't do Twitter. I'm never going to do Twitter. I think it's stupid. I mean, only because I don't think there's enough marketing information on it. I think it's a lot of white noise. I think people have to learn how to make it better. I mean, it's a lot of fluff value. I have Facebook on there. They can find me on there. But I'm not sold on Twitter yet. I mean, I get it. I understand what it is. But I don't know how people sitting around talking about, like, what kind of toilet paper they use or what they had for lunch. I don't know how that moves the needle, so to speak. Not yet. Someday it will, but I'm not
sold. Very valid point. Very, very valid. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's truly a pleasure and an honor from a longtime fan that grew up watching
you
in the 90s. And I really appreciate
it. Thank you. All right, man. Anytime. Brother, thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
All right, brother.
All right, everybody. That was Mr. Mike Bucci, class act, great guy. He gave us some of his time tonight. He gave us overtime, more time than we actually planned to have. But absolutely awesome interview. He's a class act. Definitely go see him if you have a chance. It's very rare that he goes out there and wrestles on the scene anymore. He's not out there that much. He's got a 9-to-5 job, regular guy, normal guy from my hometown. Definitely awesome. ECW legend. Would have liked to get, you know, more of the ECW in, but next time. He said he'll come on anytime, and we'll hold him up to that. We'll have him back on the air. But right now, we're going to take you to our normal scheduled program, PWP Radio. We'll be talking about a lot of great stuff tonight, especially Monday Night Raw last night, which I thought was one of the standout Raws. But we're going to start off with a little TNA lockdown. But first, I just want to throw little plugs out there. Please check out ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com for some great, fresh, original articles from wrestling fans all over the world. Not all professional writers. Some of us are better than others, for sure. Not everybody's on an equal playing field, but these are fans giving their opinions, working their asses off to provide content for you. So please check out ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Leave some comments. Try to support the page in any way you possibly can. Also, if you're interested in advertising, your small business, radio show, or anything else you can possibly think of, please email me, ProWrestlingPowerhouse@gmail.com, for more information on advertising to thousands of our unique consumers. I mean, we have 3 weekly radio shows. We've got the website. We've got Facebook, Twitter. We will advertise whatever you want on all of those avenues. Just got to give me an email. Let me know. Also, tomorrow night, live here on the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network, on the Oh You Didn't Know radio show, none other than Fred Ottman. You don't know who that is? Tugboat. Typhoon. The Shockmaster. That's right. The man who was responsible for one of the most infamous moments in professional wrestling history. The Shockmaster will be with us live tomorrow night, PWP Radio. That will be absolutely hilarious. There's so much to talk about with that guy. You know, he's just a legendary figure in professional wrestling. He's been around forever. And you can bet your bottom dollar that we will be asking him about the Shockmaster incident. So join Seth and John for Oh You Didn't Know Radio tomorrow night. But speaking of my man John, I'm going to bring him in right now. John, JCD DiMicelli, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, how's it going? I do have to tell you that we are pondering a name change from Oh You Didn't Know to Oh You Were Not Aware of This in honor of Damian Sandow last night.
That was actually a really funny moment for Monday Night Raw, for sure. Definitely, a lot of people called that would happen, but it was funny. It was hilarious. And I'm going to bring in another one of our regular contributors, a good guy in his own right, somebody who is on taking off from WWE for a while, just saying goodbye to the product. Let's bring in Toph. Toph, what's going on, man?
Oh, hey, guys. What's going on tonight?
Nothing. Just got off the phone with Nova, Mike Bucci, Simon Dean. Pure class act. It was a great interview. I'm happy he gave us some of his time. Would have loved to have him on for longer, but next time we will have him on for longer, guaranteed. We'll get some of that ECW knowledge out of him. But we were able to plug his stuff, what's coming up, WrestleMania weekend. We'll be at PWS. And speaking of PWS, Pro Wrestling Syndicate, we'll have their promoter, Eric Pleska, on the show live next week. And let me tell you what, this guy is an open book. He has stories upon stories, and he just lets them loose. Plus, he's got a lot of heat with certain individuals in the wrestling business, and I told him he's got an open platform. I mean, he's got, like, a show he regularly contributes to on the radio here and on the internet, but we're completely different. It'll be a different fan base, and he's going to definitely shoot pretty hard next week, I have a feeling. So that will be fun. But right now, tonight, guys, I want to talk about the fallout from TNA Lockdown, and we had our little show the other night, a little bit of technical difficulties, but we were able to salvage it. You can find the archives of our post-lockdown show tomorrow right here on blogtalkradio.com/PWP Radio if you want to listen to our immediate reactions. But considering we didn't really have a great flow the other night, you know, I wasn't ready to host. But now I am. I'm in the mood. I'm ready to rock and roll. I want to hear what you guys think about Bully Ray finally turning heel, finally revealing himself as the leader, the president of Aces and Eights. I'm going to kick it to my man John first. John, let's hear his thoughts. I'm Bully Ray in this whole heel turn.
I thought for something that was overly predictable and, you know, overly obvious, I really thought the execution was amazing. I haven't watched a TNA pay-per-view in a long time. I watch Impact on, like, those little video clips that they put on the website, like, the morning after. And I got to admit, it was awesome. And, you know, they did... What I noticed they did was they kept you guessing, even though it was obvious it was going to be Bully. Excuse me. The way Hogan was talking about Bully and talking up Bully, it did plant a seed in your head. Like, you know, at what point is Jeff Hardy going to feel disrespected, you know, by Hogan? And maybe it won't be Bully. Maybe it's Hardy. And then Hogan comes out with Brooke. Does, you know, what's that got to do? The dynamic was just amazing. And it was really well done. It was one of the better well executed things in all of wrestling in a long time. And you know, the ending with, you know, all the garbage being thrown in the ring, you know, despite what TNA says about that not being planted, you know, that's whatever. But it was the right way for that pay-per-view to end. And if there's anyone who can really take this angle to a whole other dynamic and really generate a boatload of heat, it's Bully. If you've ever seen any of his ECW stuff, when he has made crowds just want to murder him, if he even goes half that route with this, it will be a success.
Well, yeah, I got to say that the execution was well done. I definitely enjoyed it. There was parts of that show that made me think that maybe they would hold off on it for the you know, the live impact they have coming up from Chicago. Because that's the thing with wrestling in general, not just TNA, but sometimes they milk an angle for a little too long before they actually reveal who's the leader, who's behind it, whatever. It's something that a lot of people have been pissed off about, hot shot booking, so to speak, and a term that was basically made up on the internet, hot shot booking. This storyline, I can honestly say, is the farthest thing from hot shot booking. They truly believe that, hey, we've got 52 weeks in a year, let's get one calendar year out of this Aces and Eights storyline. Let's get a year. Let's get 52 weeks out of it. And then, you know, I'm sure they're coming up with a plan for post-Aces and Eights because they have to. If you don't have a plan somewhere to go to once the storyline culminates and ends, you got nothing. So it's great that their TNA has kind of put all their eggs into one basket, so to speak, and said, hey, we're rolling with Aces and Eights. We're going to take the storyline for 1 year, and I can bet your damn bottom dollar it'll end next year at Bound for Glory, or this year at Bound for Glory. Sorry about that. But Toph, after letting it sink in for a while and not just right after the show, what are your thoughts on this whole heel turn with Bully Ray?
I think it worked pretty well. It's like when you read a critique for a movie review and you're kind of not interested in it. You think you've already have an idea of what it's going to be like. Then you see the movie yourself in person and you're like, oh, you know, it actually was not bad. I thought turning Bully was the only way to legitimize the Aces and Eights. You know, for the entire year it's been around, many fans just don't care about it. So by having Bully use Hogan and screw Brooke Hogan and go heel and win the world title and reform the Dudley Boys all at the same time, he did all that. I mean, think about all the stuff he did. Think about that. Let that sink in. He screwed Hulk. He screwed Brooke. He turned heel. He won the title. He's the president of the Aces and Eights and reformed the Dudley Boys all in one match. That's brilliant. All that in one match. Great.
Yeah, it was good. It was a big moment, definitely a huge moment for TNA. Now, I just want to get one thing across, one thing perfectly clear here about this BS with the crowd throwing garbage into the ring, there being plants, whatever it was. Now, I commented immediately when I saw it happen on Twitter. I commented that it was obvious to me that there were plants in the crowd. I gave it an ugh just because I knew they were trying to go for that NWO moment. I knew that's what that Hogan, Bischoff, whoever was booking that angle was trying to go for, and I don't blame them. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it's smart booking. This is professional wrestling. It's a work. Hello, everybody. If you're listening to the show, you obviously know what you're watching is a work. And immediately, when I posted that on Twitter, I was getting so much backlash from people. People were just firing at me that, WWE fanboy and WWE whatever. But that's not the case. That's not the case. It was smart by TNA to put people in the crowd to throw garbage into the ring. Obvious, but smart. And I don't really see the big deal in it. I wasn't trying to say that they did the bad thing here and did that. Thought it was smart, but it just came off a little corny to me, and that's all there is to it. So I just wanted to get that out there in the open. I'm not a TNA hater. I'm a guy who thinks that they can go in a completely different direction and be a lot better off. But what do I know? So TNA Lockdown, Bully Ray turns heel, big moment. This Thursday on Impact, they're going live on the road in America pretty much for the first time. You know, they're going to be in Chicago. It's going to be a big, big, big show. And I'm going to kick it to John first. What do you expect from this TNA show? What do they really need to accomplish?
They need to do one thing. They don't have to get crazy. They don't have to go, you know, and do 75 things at once. Just have Bully give a promo about how he laid this all out. He needs to embarrass both Hogans. He needs and that's it. And just talk about how this was a plan from day one. And you know what? Screw you all. I'm the man now. That's it. It's very simple. You don't need Brooke Hogan going on Twitter saying, "No, guys, this isn't a storyline. I'm really mad at my husband," and all that stupid garbage. Because it's stuff like that that's going to take away from this. And it's stuff like that that's going to get her and Hulk booed eventually. People are not going to feel bad for them as victims. They're going to laugh at them as idiots. That's all you need to do.
Especially
it's
in Chicago.
Very simple.
When you're in Chicago up against that crowd, there's a big possibility that Bully Ray is going to get cheered when he comes out with that heavyweight championship. Because, wait a minute, I know you made this point, Toph. This guy has been busting his ass for practically ever. He's been busting his ass for years. And the fact of the matter is he is now a world champion for the first time in his career. I know you posted that video of him talking trash to Triple H back from 2002 about being world champion. And I thought that was really cool that you posted that because I forgot that even happened. And I think that Chicago crowd might cheer him. What do you think would happen at this TNA live taping? Do you think it's going to get cheered? Do you think it's going to get booed? What does TNA need to accomplish?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, it's all sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
As far as the story is concerned, I don't really care what they do. They can do whatever they want to do. I'm thinking about it more from a business standpoint because under all extensive purposes, this is the biggest impact that they're going to make, no pun intended. I mean, this is going to be their first live show in America where they're going to be outside of the impact zone. So I'm thinking more so about how WCW Nitro was, the first one in Mall of America. And I went back and watched that show over the weekend, and looking back at it, it was like everything Nitro did on that first show in Mall of America was they basically displayed everything that they had that WWF did not have. They showed, like, the opener, I think, was Brian Pillman against...
Liger.
Yeah, Liger. Yeah,
Pillman Liger.
Yeah, right. It was like the whole show was basically they were just displaying the stuff. They were pushing down the throat to the fans to what they had, to what WWF doesn't have. So what TNA needs to do, like as far as storylines are concerned, I don't care. They can do whatever they want to do. They need to push down what they have that WWF doesn't have. They need to give that X Division focus. They need to give that Knockouts Division focus and how it's a little bit more meaning over there. They need to let Bully be a little bit more edgy, maybe even a few curse words, not too crazy, though. But they just basically need to push an edgy product to let people know, hey, we're not the alternative. We're not the replacement. Like, you can come here, too, and watch us for a good wrestling product. So they just need to seem different. You don't want to. I don't want fans to look at the show and be like, oh, that's cool, but I can't wait to watch Raw next Monday. Like, no, I want them to watch the show and feel like, you know, I actually look forward to watching this every Thursday. So as long as they push their product and nothing else, everything will be fine. I'm mostly concerned about Hulk Hogan and Jeff Hardy because I don't really know what kind of reaction they're going to get from the Chicago crowd, especially Jeff Hardy, because you know how CM Punk is over there. So, yeah.
Yeah, they won't forget that storyline with CM Punk. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if Hogan is the guy to kick off this show, although it should be Aces and Eights, obviously. But, you know, Hogan, I'm a big Hogan fan forever, but he's got that ego. He's got an ego like nobody else. But right now, let's bring in
Hogan, real quick.
Yeah. Four-time tag team champion. I'm curvy. I'm cute. I'm a champion.
TLD is with us live on the air. TLD, what's going on, man?
Not much. I just got back from a very gruesome game of volleyball. I am so beat up. But I want
and
to be back
TLD.
Here tonight. So... how you doing?
I'm pretty good. You cut out there for a second. No big deal. But sorry, John, I cut you off a minute ago. You had something to say.
No,
that's fine. It's okay.
Yeah, it is
okay. Hogan's probably safe for the next, I'd say, month or so, you know, worth of shows. He can probably get about four live shows because, remember, they're going to go live every other week. He's safe for at least four live shows. If I was him, though, I'd keep her off Twitter with the stupidity, because if it gets corny, if they stay corny like that, the crowds are going to turn on them. He's probably safe Thursday night, and he's probably safe, I think, where do they go? They go Arkansas next?
Yeah.
He's safe for those first couple shows, but if they really keep this up where she's really like, you know, oh, I'm so mad, you know, blah, 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 it's not a work, you guys. Like, that stuff, that's going to eventually domino effect down to him, and that's when people are gonna turn on him. So
yeah, nobody's gonna buy that. No, if there's a storyline wedding, for crying out loud, nobody's gonna buy that. It's not a work. Give me a break.
Right.
Come
right,
on,
which,
man. I wasn't aware of that. This is the first time I'm hearing that they did that, and that to me is insane. What are they doing? Brooke Hogan.
She put that out Monday morning. She put that out Monday.
That's the thing, John, is Brooke Hogan has a Twitter fan following that isn't the normal wrestling fan following. These are people that like her music and crap.
Yeah, but the problem
fans.
Is, Jay, the thing is, though, that stuff gets picked up. So even if her, you know, whatever, 500,000 Twitter followers are all just her people that listen to her music and this and that, that's fine. But all it's going to take is that one wrestling guy, whether it be someone that has a dirt sheet or, you know, it just whatever, and it gets out, now that's going to travel. You know, Brooke comments on Bully Ray. And that's where it's gonna resonate, you know, and that's what's going to really hurt this eventually. She needs to shut up. And the best way you do that for now, I wrote this in my article, you have Dixie come out Thursday night and tell Hogan, listen, it's nothing personal, but business-wise, you made the wrong decision. You made a personal decision, and I can't have my GM do that, and take them off TV for a little bit. Fire Brooke as the head of the Knockouts and take them off TV for a little bit. This way Bully can really get that heat under him, because if not, people are going to turn on Hogan, turn on Brooke, and they're going to love the fact that Bully's just going to keep constantly abusing them and victimizing them.
Yeah, if that happens, then you've completely defeated the purpose of your angle. Will, let's get your thoughts on this. We're talking about the first TNA Impact from Chicago, and it's a big show. Probably, I go as far as saying it's probably the biggest show in their history at this point. What do they need to accomplish on this show to really make a statement on Thursday night?
I think the main thing that TNA needs to do is they have to promote. This is a very hot angle. This is a bigger angle, I think, than most people think. I think they, Sunday night, they really turned the corner of this company around. I said it that night that this moment is going to change TNA, I think, forever. They built that up so incredibly well. They've been building storylines for a long time. You go back to James Storm and Bobby Roode. You go back to AJ Styles now, where now he has to wait a whole year for a title shot. And then you have the Aces and Eights, you know, going on. They had Robbie E and Robbie T. That was a whole 2-year build to get to where they did. They're keeping these storylines really, really long. And I think people are investing into it. I'm really into TNA. I don't miss an episode of TNA. You know, I'm not really into SmackDown, you know, as much as I am into TNA. I can tell you right now, I think, if anything, I like TNA more than I like Raw most of the time. I don't skip the matches on TNA. I skip a lot of the Raw stuff. So I've been really intrigued, and what they need to do is they really got to push the envelope. They're going to be live. They're going to be in Chicago. I think they'll get enough heat where Bully Ray will get booed in the crowd. The Jeff Hardy thing, they should save him to the end of the night and get his revenge. They should not have him anywhere in the arena until the very end of the show. That, to me, would be a nice little impact, quote-unquote, of the night. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the show. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and if there's a possibility, Eric Jeff Hardy's got a pretty nasty concussion. Not sure of the validity of that, but I could honestly see it after that bully bomb he took off the cage.
One thing I want to mention, though, that if people are listening to this show and usually are not watching TNA, this is the show where I think you got to give it a chance. And I think if you give it a chance, I think you'll be presently surprised, and I think you'll see that edgier product that people are looking for.
Yeah, I don't always tune into TNA live. I've been watching the show every week, though, especially since we started this whole Pro Wrestling Powerhouse thing. I've been watching it on a weekly basis, whether it's on DVR or whatever. But, you might have a good point there. I don't know how edgy they're going to get on the first night, but you might see some blood. You might see some swearing, like you said, Toph. It might be a little bit borderline, like Attitude Era type deal. I'm just really interested in the crowd and how they react to the wrestlers. It's That has a lot to do with it. That's a big part of it. And we're just going to have to wait and see what happens, because TNA has an opportunity now. They're opening up a new chapter, so to speak. And with the new pay-per-view thing they have going on, the new schedule, it's more like an old-school WWE schedule, how they used to do them. I think there's a lot of potential here. And let's just hope they don't mess it up. That's all I can really say. They've got a lot to do. How about, Tope, let me kick it to you. Final thoughts on what you think TNA needs to accomplish from not only this week, but here on out.
I mean, there's nothing I can say that hasn't been said already. Just put a lot more focus on wrestling, focus on edgier product, but more importantly, they really need to legitimize and push those X divisions, the tag team division, and the knockout division. I know there's a lot of people in OVW that are waiting. You know, one of the biggest problems really is that at the end of the day, TNA only has one show. They just have Impact. WWE, on the other hand, has several shows. So, you know, all those lower card guys, you can see them on Main Event, Superstars, NXT. TNA has those lower card guys, too. They're all in OVW. And it's time for TNA to start taking some chances and bring in some new blood. They need to push that X division. They need to push the Knockouts division and the Tag Team division to let those casual fans that don't watch TNA as much know that here in this company, these lower card divisions do mean something, unlike in other companies. That's what they need to do.
Yeah, my whole gripe is that exactly with TNA is that you look at that roster and you see all these guys that you saw, you know, 13, 14 years ago. You know, even Bully Ray, the champion, I was watching him in 1997 for crying out loud, and now he's the world champion, but it took him that damn long, and he's the focal point. You know, Jeff Hardy, Rob Van Dam, Devon, Chavo, Kurt Angle, D'Lo, the list goes on of these guys that I've been watching just forever, and I think to me, That's a little problem that they have. They really need to find a new face, some new blood. And even if you look at a lot of the guys that are currently in their, so to speak, mid-card or like D-level main eventers or whatever you want to call them, the Daniels, the Storms, the Styles, the Samoa Joes, guys like that, they've been in TNA forever. They've been in TNA for nearly 10 years, most of them. How long can they really be in that one company without being reinvented? A lot of them have been reinvented time and time again. But how long until that fan base kind of just like throws their arms in the air and say, oh, we still got to see these old Attitude Era guys. They're not really getting behind these other wrestlers. It's just, that to me is a huge problem. You talk about Bobby Roode, been there for forever. Eric Young, been there forever. These guys have all been there. We need those guys from OVW to come up. You need to find your next diamond in the rough, your next gem, the next guy you can put in there with Bully Ray, in there with Jeff Hardy, and get them over. It's been done with AJ. It's been done with James Storm. It's been done with Bobby Roode, and so on and so forth. It's been done already with all of them in this company. They need to find that next shining star. John, your final thoughts on TNA and what the future holds?
I mean, it's, you know, it's not nothing new on Thursday night. That's the one thing. The only thing that's changing Thursday night is they're going live again. I just hope, and I've said this before, I think I said it to you guys when they announced this, I just hope that if the rating doesn't jump initially, they don't do what they do, what they've done in the past, and pull the plug on this right away. You got to give this a little more than a month or 6 weeks, or, you know, you gotta give this some time to resonate, you know, let, you know, the new markets get used to the product, and then go from there. And, you know, that's the most important thing, is I hope they just don't get nervous, you know, if Thursday night the rating doesn't move, and then it's like, oh, my God, what are we doing?
Yeah, they need to stay consistent. They need to realize, like I said before, you got 52 weeks in a year. Take your time. It's no rush. Try to just build it slowly instead of doing things drastically. Will, your final thoughts on TNA and what the future holds?
Honestly, I think they have a lot of talent already. I think the OVW guys, I don't think they need them right now. I think they have to build Matt Morgan. I think they have to build up, you know, Kenny King. Even this new AJ Styles that's coming back this week, you know, they got to build those guys up, because there's still a lot of people who have no idea who they are. And this is, hopefully, they're going to get some audience in here, you know, to watch and try to, you know, push the guys they already got. They already got good guys. You know, they just need to get out there more. They just don't promote TNA enough. You know, I don't know if that's Spike's fault or you know, TNA's fault, or I don't know what it is, but they really got to push the product. I think that's the only way they're going to get out there. They need to get WWE-type marketing.
They need to be able to have a guy who's a champion that could sit next to Jay Leno any night of the week and be able to talk about being the champion. Or Conan O'Brien. You know, the WWE superstars are always on Conan's show on TBS. And that kind of audience, the age range that he goes for, is your wrestling fan, the 18 to 34 demographic or whatever it is. That's the type of deal they need. They need to bust into the mainstream somehow, some way. As much as, you know, you're the diehard pure wrestling fans, hate the mainstream. Hate the fact that these wrestlers are in movies and are bigger, than larger than life superstars and whatnot. TNA needs that. They need to bust out of this realm. That's what they thought they were going to get with Hogan. But we all know Hogan, you know, he's a self-promoter first and foremost. That's what they thought they were going to get with Flair, with Sting, all these guys. And it's just not the case. They need to bust into the mainstream, make a big bang, so to speak, make something happen. And that's what they need to do. But take your time doing it. 52 weeks in a year. This, I think, is the middle of the angle with Bully Ray. This is the middle. It's the peak. Now you got to kind of take it over the hill and just kind of go towards the finale, to the ending. You need to just be careful, though. Take your time. Don't do anything too drastic. After this quick break, we're going to bust into some WWE talk. I know, Topher, you haven't been watching the product, but maybe you saw a little bit of Raw. I heard about Raw last night. We'll talk about the build to WrestleMania, some of the mistakes, some of the big mistakes they made on Raw last night. I definitely got to talk about that because I was noticing it throughout the night, although it was an above-average Monday Night Raw. But we'll be right back in a couple minutes, so stick with us right here on PWP Radio. Here's a little song that has a little bit to do with what we're going to talk about. It's a song that has something to do with The Undertaker.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look way down the river, and what do you think I see? I see a band of angels, and they're coming after me. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look down yonder, Gabriel. Put your feet on the land and sea. But Gabriel, don't you blow your trumpet till you hear from me. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Jesus, meet me. Meet me in the middle of the air. And if these wings don't fail me, I will meet you anywhere. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, meet me, mother and father. Meet me down the river road. And mama, you know that I'll be there when I check in, my Lord. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.
And with that, I'd like to say, you know, rest in peace to Paul Bearer, Mr. William Moody. Last week, we had one of our greatest shows in Pro Wrestling Powerhouse radio history, our most successful show. And we had just about 1,600 live listeners in and out all night with our interview with Maria Kanellis. And shortly after the show ended, of course, I left my little studio here and I put the computer out in the other room, was kind of surfing the net. And before you know it, I saw the news of Paul Bearer passing away. I checked for some kind of confirmation. Of course, WWE.com had the story up and called into another radio show I know that goes on right about now called Shark Attack Live, and I broke the news live on that show. I kind of wish that we could have done it and talked about it last week, but considering this was a huge loss for the professional wrestling business, there's something about it when, you know, a pro wrestling personality or wrestler passes away. You get that as wrestling fans, you know what I'm talking about if you're listening now and you're a diehard fan, because if you're listening, you're a diehard fan. There's no other way about it. You're hooked. And you get that weird feeling when somebody you grew up watching or somebody you get that emotional attachment to passes away. You know, I'll tell you, like, I'll take an example. When a famous athlete passed away, like Junior Seau, I was always a big Junior Seau fan, and he committed suicide recently. But I didn't get that same feeling. You know, I just like, damn, this sucks. But when I got the news about Paul Bearer, it was sad. It was really sad. You get that surreal moment, that pit of your stomach type thing. And I talked about it that entire night last Tuesday, pretty much all Wednesday, talked about it all week. It was a big discussion. And I think WWE did the right thing last night on Monday Night Raw. They paid great tribute to the life and the memory of, you know, William Moody, Paul Bearer. They showed some classic moments, added some hilarious moments, just some great stuff. And I just want to say on behalf of Team PWP and the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network, I'd like to say rest in peace, Mr. Paul Bearer. And with that, I'm going to kick it over to Toph first. Let's hear your – Paul Bearer passed away. It's obvious news. What were your thoughts on Paul Bearer's life and legacy on the wrestling business?
I had a weird lump in my throat when I heard he died. It was weird because 2 weeks ago I was scrolling through videos on YouTube, and I found that I don't know if you guys remember, there was a segment many years ago back when Undertaker was in his big evil persona and Brother Love kind of made a one-night-only return – and Taker tombstoned them, and it was funny. And after I watched that, I saw a Paul Bearer-related tab, and I had never actually seen how Paul Bearer debuted. And so for that entire day, I was just looking at different Paul Bearer stuff. And I just thought he was a very definitely unique, interesting personality. There's never going to be another Paul Bearer. You really can't compare him to anyone. He kind of was like a full package deal. You couldn't have The Undertaker without Paul Bearer. And for a long period of time, you couldn't have Paul Bearer without The Undertaker. You know, they were kind of like, came together. Just the way he carried himself, and, you know, he scared a lot of kids, and the way he carried the urn and his promos and the stuff with Kane. And I think Kofi Kingston said it in one of those clips on Raw, where he said whoever Paul Bearer was with, he just kind of instantly legitimized. And that was true, because I remember when he turned on The Undertaker at SummerSlam 96 as a kid, I was so angry, and I was, you know, felt so betrayed, and I wanted Undertaker to beat up Bearer. But he was definitely one of my favorite personalities in wrestling, and it's a shame to hear he's not with us anymore.
Yeah, it really was. He's the type of guy that always made cameos. He always came back and did something. He was a true student and great mind for the pro wrestling business. A lot of people don't know that he was an agent with WWE throughout the early 2000s, and he was a backstage. He was a great influence on a lot of the young talent back there. You know, guys like John Cena, Randy Orton, a lot of their fondest memories of Paul Bearer was when he was in that role. He wasn't in front of the camera at all. He was behind the scenes only, and who knows what he helped out with, but the guy was just awesome on the mic. He could get anything over possible. You put anything in front of that guy. He was just one of the most unique personalities, not just managers, might be the most unique personality in professional wrestling history. Definitely up there. John, I don't know how much you guys covered this last week on the Wednesday night show, but your thoughts on the life legacy of Paul Bearer.
I didn't catch it till actually a buddy of mine texted me Wednesday morning And that's when I saw it. And just like Toph said, it's something about it when it initially broke just kind of sits in, like, you know, like in your throat like a lump. And, you know, it really hit hard. You know, it was one of those things, you know, that just really hit hard. And, you know, I remember, you know, the Brother Love show where he debuted, and it was like, damn. I remember reading the old magazines, and Percy Pringle was, you know, this guy with, like, Rick Rude and, you know, like, the Ultimate Warrior for a small bit, and Steve Austin, and even with Taker before he was Taker. You know, that's the other thing that gets lost in all this, is it's not just his work as Paul Bearer. If you really look back to his old stuff, I put this in my tribute article to him, you know, the stuff he did in, you know, Georgia and Florida, you know, he really was phenomenal. And the character in WWE was just, it was just amazing. It was money. And here's something I don't know if I ever told you guys. My dad is actually a funeral director. He's an undertaker. And just add that to it, him and Paul Bearer and Taker always connected to me, you know, because I had that living with me.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just, he was great in all his roles. And one thing he was able to do in WWE a lot, he was able to evolve the character. You know, after the run-in up to 96, then when he came back in 97 with a different look, then when he reverted it back in, like, 99 to the Ministry of Darkness, and even 2000 with Kane, you know, it was just, he was able to evolve and still keep that, you know. And even the run in 2010, it was just phenomenal. And I thought what they did last night was amazing, and it was well done. The video, which I think they posted on YouTube late Wednesday, that was a great video. You know, it was just, it's sad. It sucks. This one, something about it just hits a little harder, you know?
Yeah, the timing was just incredible as well, because, as you know, The Undertaker just came back. And not that, you know, a wrestling storyline has anything to do with a real man's life in any way, shape, or form, in most cases anyway. But in this case, it just seems kind of weird to me. You know, Undertaker makes his return the next day. Paul Bearer passed away, and, you know, the way WWE tied it into the storyline. Before we get into that, I just want to say that I was at WrestleMania 20, and in Madison Square Garden. You were there too, right, John?
Yep.
Yeah, and everybody knew Undertaker was coming back and everything, but nobody really knew Paul Bearer would be with him. You know, there was a lot of speculation about what the gimmick would be, what he would look like, Undertaker, you know, and the first thing you heard, you know, after Kane came out, had his entrance, first thing you heard was the, oh, yes, first thing you heard. And it was just instant pandemonium in that place because this guy, he was making his return with The Undertaker, and that's what everybody wanted to see. But last night on Monday Night Raw, you know, it started out, Undertaker came out, just a classy tribute. And, you know, the urn sitting in the ring, they played the video, Undertaker's music's playing, and then who cuts it off? CM Punk. Cult of Personality blasts over the speakers. And you want to talk about heat? That's some heat right there. That's some real professional wrestling heat. And I'm not saying this was at all, this wasn't classless at all. This wasn't like one of those things where you can say, wow, that's really pushing the envelope. This was absolutely phenomenal. It was a great way to show respect to Paul Bearer's life and legacy, you know, because William Moody passed away, but Paul Bearer was a WWE character, and he's the WWE character that was tied to The Undertaker, going into WrestleMania. Kane's father was in the storyline, so you know there had to have been a reaction from Kane. But I just want to hear your thoughts on the opening of Raw last night, which I thought was really good. It was one of the hottest openings, I think, in recent memory. So I'll kick it to, I guess, Toph first. Toph, did you watch it or no?
Yeah, I saw it.
All right, what were your thoughts on what they did?
I figured they would do that. The weird thing is I'm not sure if I posted it on the page or not, but I saw an interview that Paul Bearer did many years ago that was talking about the Owen Hart tragedy, and he basically said that it was him, Taker, and Stone Cold, and they were in the locker room, and They were just working on how they were going to work the match, and then JBL, or back then Bradshaw, came in and told him about what happened to Owen, and all three of them just kind of collectively just kind of sat there, just kept to themselves, and agreed that they were still going to work the match because, you know, Owen was a performer, and Paul said that Owen would have wanted them to go on, and so they went out there and they performed, you know, but they tried their best not to look up and still tried to entertain the fans. And even though, like, what happened to Owen was sad, they tried to perform to kind of make the fans temporarily forget about what happened, if that makes sense. So after watching that, I figured, you know, well, if that's how Paul Bearer truly felt, then I'm sure he wouldn't mind, you know, them turning it somewhat into an angle. I didn't think it was, you know, insulting. I think the only thing that really ever insulted me was probably after Eddie Guerrero died and Randy Orton said he was in hell. That was a little pushing it for me because I was a huge Eddie fan. But other than that, though, I thought it was a good opening, and I don't think it pushed the envelope, and it does fit into the storyline. It's just kind of very awkward, you know, because this is WrestleMania season, and, you know, as this WrestleMania season, wrestling fans should feel excited, but with the death of a real person, it's just kind of, you know, you can't really get as excited as you would have been, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, they were able to kind of take that, you know, mourning, turn it into a little bit of excitement later on when CM Punk, who's the heel, you know, he's the hated villain, and the whole point of it was for him to be the douche heel and to have that moment ruined, and then, you know, Kane got his revenge on Punk. But then what happened at the end of the row? We had that Punk-Kane match that I thought was pretty damn good, no disqualification. Kane wins, victorious over CM Punk, which is apropos. Undertaker starts making his way to the ring, and what happens? CM Punk steals the urn that was sitting at ringside, which, you know, was a little bit predictable because they kind of showed Punk looking at it earlier on. They put the camera on it a couple times. Punk steals the urn, starts beating the hell out of Kane with it, which just adds to the heel heat, and he steals the urn. He's probably the 10th WWE superstar in history to steal that damn urn, man.
Thank you for remembering that.
he puts himself in the category with guys like Kama Mustafa and Mr. Hughes and who else? The Giant Gonzalez probably stole it too. Harvey Whippleman probably stole it.
Yeah,
such a damn thing. Yeah, exactly. Even Hogan stole that thing during the match and opened it up and threw the ashes in the Undertaker's face at one point. And then one time, freaking a green smoke came out of the damn urn. So they've done a million things with this urn, and I'm glad they kind of brought it back because everybody was calling for that all week. I mean, how many times did you hear or read on Facebook or Twitter or whatever that they were wishing the urn would come back? And if WWE saw those comments, they gave the fans what they wanted. But let's get your thoughts, John, on this match with CM Punk and Kane and the storyline that kind of developed after the match ended.
Yeah, I thought the match, you know, the whole – it's amazing what Glenn Jacobs can do. It really is. You know, I thought his work last night, you know, the no words with Josh Matthews during the interview, then the way he came out holding the urn – you know, yeah, it was the right call to have Kane go over Punk last night. Punk's not going to lose anything by it. You know, it's fine. You know, it was fine. It was well done. The angle at the end with him bashing Kane with the urn and then taking it and doing the pose, you know, I'm interested to see where they follow that up with next week. You know, and as far as the beginning goes of it, Punk even said it. He's like, I'm not even here to talk about him. He's like, to him, you'll always be perfect, but now we're going to talk about what you're going to be to everyone else. You know, like, Punk put that out there, like, immediately, which, you know, was fine, and he still got it across. I thought everything with Punk, Taker, Kane was perfect, and nothing wrong with it at all.
Yeah, me too, man. Toph, what were your thoughts on the match and what transpired after the match ended?
The only thing I think they should have done, and maybe this is just a troll in me, I think of all the times, this probably would have been the most appropriate for Daniel Bryan to give Kane a hug.
You might be right. Yeah, you might be right. They didn't really interact at all last night.
They
didn't. Surprisingly.
See, when I first heard Paul Bearer was, like, you know, legitimately gone, you know, most people were thinking about how this is going to affect the match itself. My first immediate thought was, how is this going to affect Kane? Because even though The Undertaker and Paul Bearer were, you know, together for years, from a kayfabe standpoint, Paul Bearer was Kane's father. So this monster, the big red machine, his kayfabe father is no longer with us. So how is that going to affect his character? Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, now that he's not here, from a kayfabe point of view, Kane really has no reason to continue this comic relief with Daniel Bryan anymore. I think we now have a reasonable excuse to make him a monster. I know that sounds a little tacky, but I just thought that the match was good and everything was great. I just felt that I would have put some segment in there of Daniel Bryan giving Kane a hug, just a real hug, not for comedy moments, but, you know, just as a feel-good moment to the fans watching that were bad as well.
It makes you wonder, too. Yeah, it would have been a feel-good moment. It makes you wonder what Kane's destination is for WrestleMania at this point, because I know they kind of broke away from anything he was doing with Daniel Bryan last night for this one night only, and I'm sure next week on Raw there won't be any mentions of Paul Bearer. I don't think so anyway, unless they continue this angle with the urn, but it's not necessary in my opinion. I don't think it's really necessary at all. But they'll probably do something where Punk has it, Undertaker gets it back, something like that. But Kane seems to be, like, kind of lost in the shuffle here. Daniel Bryan, I don't know if he started a feud with Ziggler and AJ and Big E Langston. I don't think I'm kind of curious on what they're doing with those two guys. Is it going to be, you know, Kane and Daniel Bryan against Ziggler and Big E? Are they going to kind of build towards something else? John, what's your take on what Kane's going to be doing at WrestleMania?
I don't know. And the last couple of weeks, you know, there's a lot of guys that have to be added on that show. I'm starting to get a feeling where they're not going to drop the tag titles and then face each other. I think you're not going to get Money in the Bank. So everybody who's calling for that, you're not going to get that. I could see like a 5 or 6 team gauntlet. And to be honest with you, I think they're going to win at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's no reason to take the tag titles off them. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, Kane and Daniel against Dolph and AJ, not Dolph and Big E, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting that guy's freaking name. But, Dolph and Big E, because they kind of, you know, Daniel Bryan was outnumbered last night in his loss to Dolph Ziggler in what was a really good match. You want to talk about a hot opening to Raw, this match was the first match of the night, and it really got things off to a great pace. These guys always work well together, and you have that AJ storyline kind of in the background, and Daniel Bryan's hilarious 18-second joke about, you know, oh, you must know a lot about 18 seconds being with Dolph Ziggler. So that was great. But, it makes you wonder what Kane's going to be up to. Toph, do you have any thoughts on what's going to take place with Kane and Daniel Bryan heading into WrestleMania?
I honestly don't think WWE knows. I'm convinced they don't really care about the undercard. They're just kind of winging it as they go. With the New Age Outlaws coming back, and see, what I read a report like a while back that the original plan was for the New Age Outlaws to come back at the beginning of the year, and they were supposed to feud with Road Scholars because they were working some house shows and getting positive reactions. I believe they're both backstage agents now, correct?
Yeah, Road Dogg definitely is a backstage agent. I know Billy Gunn is one of your trainers at NXT, though.
Yeah. So I thought that was going to be the plan, and they seem to be using them consistently on Raw. Like, first, we saw them come back at the old school Raw thing, but they made another appearance, even though it was just for Brock Lesnar to take them out. The bottom line is the fans are into them, and I could definitely see some type of tag team gauntlet match, or I could just Kane not being on the card at all. I mean, it wouldn't be the first WrestleMania where mid-card champs are left out. I mean, there's been plenty of WrestleManias where the mid-card champs don't show up, so.
Yes, in this case, I think they'll do something with Daniel Bryan and Kane, though, because they've been so over for so long, and you're going to have to throw two other mid-card type of guys in with them. Like I said, Dolph and Big E seems to make a little bit of sense here. But speaking of your mid-card and everything, and I know it's getting shuffled around. I read a little BS on one of the Facebook pages about, I don't know what website broke it, I don't know if it was Insider or whatever it was, but that Vince McMahon somehow is taking over what's going on with the WrestleMania card, and he's mad at the writers, and he's reshuffling everything, yada, 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 whatever the case may be. The fact of the matter is, one thing that really pissed me off last night on Monday Night Raw was that they started building a little bit more towards Ryback Mark Henry, which is awesome. Happy about that, because I'd love to see that match at WrestleMania. But they are doing it on SmackDown. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't know if it's going to be some kind of schmoz. I'm not sure.
Hopefully it's the swerve.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it's going to be some kind of situation.
Yeah,
I
don't think it's happening.
Yeah,
Mark
you don't
Henry,
want to give it away on TV. That'd
I
be
think
a hard
the way to do it would be to have Mark Henry just beat the living piss out of Ryback like nobody else has before. Because if you give this match away on SmackDown, he just completely blew a gigantic match at WrestleMania. What do you guys think?
I agree. I would actually pay to see that because I don't care what anyone says. Henry's improved his work, and he's a good worker, and I know he doesn't have much time left. So, you know, putting all the Goldberg jokes aside, Ryback does have talent, and, you know, the guy, he's cool. I would actually like to see that match, and I hope it just leads to a swerve or something because if that's just the actual match on SmackDown, that's a, you know, huge mistake.
Yeah, exactly. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I could just see it. If it goes more than 2 minutes, I'd be shocked. I think it's really just going to brawl out, and then, you know, they'll lead to something bigger for WrestleMania. You know, maybe if you're going to bring, I don't know who you would do, but if you're going to bring someone in as like a celebrity enforcer or something, you know, to be able to control the two of them, you know, I could see something like that maybe, you know.
I would have loved to. I had this idea in the past that I would love to see Shaquille O'Neal be that celebrity enforcer in a match. I was hoping it would be Ryback versus Big Show with Shaquille O'Neal as enforcer because he's from Jersey. And I think that would make a little bit of sense. He's not playing basketball anymore. He could use the paycheck, I'm sure. And I thought that would have been cool. But the problem with Raw last night to me, and it's got a lot to do with this Henry Ryback situation, is the show started out great, but it got horrible as the night went on. It just got slow. I'm not saying the matches weren't good. Aside from the Brock Lesnar thing, because nobody really saw that coming, although it made perfect sense and logic, the show just lost my attention. And it shouldn't do that.
Can I ask you a question about last night's show? And this is what I thought, to be honest with you. Was the show that bad if you take that whatever Jericho, Miz, Barrett, Maddox segment out of it? I think that's the segment that killed it and made everything else look horrendous for everyone. If you really look at what they did across the board, take every segment out except that one, every segment kind of had some meaning to it towards either building something or building for WrestleMania, and then that segment just was like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, because that came off really awkward. I'm not sure if that was supposed to be that way. Do you think it was supposed to be awkward where you kind of throw Brad Maddox out there and you give the crowd the impression of the people watching at home that, you know, he says he's the high-ranking executive, but I think that's the joke. He's actually not. He's just an assistant to Vicky Guerrero, and he doesn't really know what the hell he's doing. I think that's the whole point. I think it's supposed to be a joke, but it's coming over really awkward and lame.
His delivery is terrible.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
But that's the thing, though, is because whenever you see him do anything else, whether he's doing commentary or an in-ring promo or whatever, his delivery is really good. Like his commentary on SmackDown, I thought was fantastic.
But for me, guys, it's just the mid-card is just all over the place, and it's been booked badly the past few Manias for years, and it's like for some reason this year in particular, the cracks are just more visible for many, many people. Like Ryback, for example, I mean, last I checked, he had a vendetta against the Shield, and they just dropped that. Cena kind of had a misinterpretation with Ryback, and that was dropped too. What happened to Cena? He was supposed to stop the Shield. They dropped that. He's just moving on to The Rock, and Wade Barrett, he lost to that Bo Dallas dude, and, you know, now he's in the ring of Chris Jericho saying, oh, I can beat you, Chris. Well, you never even beat Bo Dallas. And then you have The Miz in there, and it's like, where's Cesaro? Like, you had him beat Cesaro, and they just dropped that. It's just, they're just tossing around the mid-carders every week. They don't know what they're doing. It's just, they're winging it, really.
Well, Cesaro beat Miz in the 2 out of 3 falls, which I think was supposed to be the end of that feud.
Oh, that's the end?
Yeah, in wrestling booking history, when you have a feud that has a 2 out of 3 falls match, especially back in the 80s and in the golden era, that is what ends the feud pretty much all the time, was 2 out of 3 falls. So, yeah, to me, that was the end of that. That just kind of nipped that and said, peace. And another problem I think that's going on is they have these movies that they're constantly pushing. And every time they have a movie segment, aside from the Halle Berry Kane thing, which I thought was hilarious, aside from that, these movie segments are just lame. They're momentum killers. Nobody wants to see the Dead Man Down trailer that we see on TV freaking 20 times. I mean, I watch ESPN all the time. That's what I have on my TV. I'm going to say 90% of the time. And that freaking trailer is on every single commercial break for the last 2 weeks. I'm sick of seeing it. Nobody wants to see that anymore. Nobody cares about Abigail Breslin getting kidnapped and a stupid 911 operator trying to save her life, whatever. Nobody wants to see that stuff. Nobody gives a rat's ass about Marine 3. Nobody is going to watch that movie. Nobody listening to this show right now, whether you're listening on iTunes, which is the easiest way to get the show, or you're listening on Stitcher, which is another really easy way to get the show, or you're just downloading the archive on Blog Talk Radio, you are not watching freaking Marine 3. I'll be shocked if you're watching that movie. And if you are watching that movie, please call in and tell me about it. You can call the number 760-888-5749 because I want to hear your thoughts on Marine 3. If you actually spent your hard-earned money on that Blu-ray or DVD, bought it, sat down, and wasted away an hour and a half, 2 hours of your life watching The Miz in a freaking action movie, I want to hear about it. I want to know what kind of experience that was for you because I'm not going to have that experience. And I don't want to have that experience. I don't even want to hear about it. You know, I don't want to hear it on Raw anymore. That's an absolute momentum killer on your pill to WrestleMania. I understand the business aspect of it. I know you can't really lose money with a DVD presentation for a shitty movie with The Miz. But the facts are facts. You're losing your audience. And it shows with the ratings. Monday Night Raw had a big problem with keeping the crowd last night, whereas, you know, you look at a card like TNA Lockdown. I'm going to take this little full circle. The main thing I liked about that card, we talked about how great the Bully Racing was, is that the card got better as the night went on. The card didn't get worse. The card got better. Every match from beginning to end seemed to mean a little more. Of course, you put your X Division match on first because it's the hot match, the high spots, whatever. That should always be the crowd starter. The pacing was great. That's how you pace a wrestling card. Monday Night Raw, not a great example of it whatsoever. You blew your load in the beginning. You blew your load at the end. You had a little bit of foreplay in the middle, and that's that. Boom. That's the end of your show. Nothing within those, what is it? What do you call it in algebraic terms or statistic terms? What's that, the median or something? You think
yeah.
The median of two numbers? The median fucking blew. It's that simple. And that's the problem that Raw has. That's the problem with the mid-card. That's what the big deal is right now. It's WrestleMania season. They need to get the rack together, get things in gear. It's got to start next Monday, because if it doesn't start next Monday, I'm losing all hope. So, yeah, that's that.
The key to the mid-card at WrestleMania is going to be Ziggler, because once Ziggler's slotted, everyone else that's kind of hanging around right now can fall into place.
You assume he's going to be on the card.
Well, listen,
yeah, you know what?
Fair
point. If he's not going to be on the card, then I'll tell you right now, if he's not going to be on the card, that's fine. Then you need to have him cut a promo and say, oh, don't worry, I know what I'm doing, and tease the cash in. I have no problem with him being on the card if that's what he does. But if he turns around and is just not on the card, then you got a problem.
Exactly. That's a big, big, big issue right now is a guy like Dolph Ziggler. What do you do with him? If he's not booked for WrestleMania, if he's not in any match, he's probably cashing in that briefcase on I would say it'd be Alberto Del Rio. But
time
limit.
Go ahead.
He's got 1 year. Oh,
do they still enforce the time limit rule? Does that still exist?
He's got 1 year. They mentioned it last night that he's got 1 year from the Money in the Bank pay per view. So he's got till July.
Oh, he's running out of time then.
Yeah, he's got some time left, you know.
They might just waste it.
I don't think they're going to waste it. I think it'll be probably, if he's not booked at WrestleMania, he's cashing at WrestleMania. It's that simple. There's going to be one point in time when somebody's going to cash in that briefcase at a WrestleMania. And if your mid-card is this lame and you're not doing anything, you basically right now have Brock Cena, Brock Triple H, you got Punk Taker, you got Swagger and Del Rio, and that's all you got. That's it. You got nothing else booked. You got four matches, and WrestleMania is usually what? It's a four-hour show. You usually have like seven or eight matches. Obviously, a couple of them are throwaway, you know, 1 minute, 2 minute, 18-second matches.
I think you can add in the Shield match. We know what that's going to be.
Yeah, you could add in the Shield, and you could add in Mark Henry, Ryback. Those matches are happening.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying
six. So you got six.
You're saying six, and you still need there's got to be a Divas match. There's not going to be a WrestleMania without a Divas match.
Well, you may have gotten your Divas match last night, unofficially.
What was that? What with the Bellas?
You may get Caitlyn one of the Bellas.
Yeah.
Already? It just came back.
You think they came back not to get a WrestleMania paycheck?
Oh, true.
They definitely did. Their boyfriends pulled the strings on that one.
Exactly.
Now their boyfriends are getting double the WrestleMania paychecks. And Cena's probably getting the second or third biggest one. Maybe even the biggest one. Who the hell knows how to pay him
out?
But you're looking at six matches. You're looking at a whole bunch of mid-card guys, upper mid-card guys, that have nothing going on. The Cesaros, the Barretts, the Miz, the Jericho. You know Jericho's going to be on the card. He didn't come back to not be on this card.
Exactly.
So that's going to be my next question to you guys. Let's take Chris Jericho, for example, and I'll kick it to Toph first. Take the guys that aren't involved in a match right now. We just gave the six matches, and you have a whole bunch of dudes left. Who would you book Chris Jericho against at WrestleMania?
Well, after last night, it looked like they were going for Jericho Barrett. I mean, we never did get that feud. It was East, after when Nexus first started, and when they were doing Team Nexus versus Team SummerSlam. I remember they were doing, they took different members from Team WWE against Team Nexus, and I think Barrett fought Jericho first, and that was, their only match. And, Barrett, he never really had that oomph, and, what better way for the student to beat the master. So you could have Jericho Barrett, but my thing is Barrett is his credibility is killed because he lost to that Bo Dallas guy and they just dropped it. I know he's not around, but you just don't have your champion lose out of the blue and just drop it. That's stupid, but I guess Barrett would be the best place to go because you know how Jericho is. He doesn't mind putting guys over, and I'm pretty sure he'll put Barrett over and make him look good.
Yeah, I think that would be a good way to go. I know they already booked this triple threat match with the Miz, Jericho and Barrett. I think that's happening next week on Raw, I'm pretty sure, John. But what would you do with Jericho? What's your plan?
I would go Barrett. I just don't want Jericho with the IC title. So if Barrett's going to go over Jericho, that would erase all the sins against Barrett. I still think if they want to get, and they can do this quick, I still think if they get Itzy, they could do Jericho Ziggler. So I think it's going to be one of those two matches, and we'll see where it goes from there.
I think that'll be it down the road.
Yeah, it's another angle they pretty much dropped is that Jericho Ziggler thing. I mean, that thing started heating up again, and it just completely ended, done with. And, Jericho is the type of guy who's, last year he was in the, I would say, co-main event of WrestleMania against CM Punk. And this year he's not going to be in one of those top matches, and it's pretty much a damn shame because Jericho, puts on probably the best show out of anybody on a weekly basis. But whatever, he's happy. He's getting a WrestleMania paycheck. He's back in action. He's going to be doing something. That's all we know. And I think that's a good way to go. But then what do you do with the Miz? You know what I mean? Miz is another guy who's not going to miss the card. I guess there's going to have to be some kind of big six-man tag or I don't know, some kind of tag team match to fill it out. It's really something where nothing's happening. But we're going to bring the show to an end, folks. Anything else to talk about? Final thoughts on the show tonight, John?
No, I listened to the interview with Bucci. That was pretty good. And, I thought, we covered everything with lockdown. We'll see what TNA brings to the table on Thursday. And, we'll see what happens, next Monday night.
How about you, Toph? Last thoughts on the show. Final thoughts.
Yeah, good show tonight, guys. See you next time.
All right. Last announcement for the night. I just want to say that I hope everybody saw the Scott Hall video that DDP put out. They're raising money for Scott Hall to get a hip replacement, and I think that's great that they're going to the wrestling fans to try to raise this money. They're looking for, I believe it was $90,000, and the fact is they got about $40,000. They're pretty much ready to go. They're on pace, I should say. They're not ready, but they're on pace. And I want to put in a donation on behalf of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network and Team PWP. And what I'm going to do is all the purchases from the Amazon store, you can access the ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, Amazon store at ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, or you can find it on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse. And I'll be putting a link up on Twitter, at PW Powerhouse. And basically what it is you purchase whatever you would normally purchase, whether it's MLB The Show for your PlayStation 3 or the new Bret Hart Blu-ray disc, or whatever it may be. You purchase whatever, we get a small proceed of that. We just get a small percentage of your purchase. It's just an affiliate percentage. And what I'm going to do for the next 2 weeks is I'm going to donate every dime that comes in from that Amazon store for the next 2 weeks to Scott Hall, because Scott Hall is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and I really hope that this is a comeback for the bad guy, that he can actually do what Jake Roberts did and lose 60 pounds and just look tremendous and get your flexibility back and get rid of all your demons. You know, Jake the Snake Roberts is now 110 days sober. That, to me, is just incredible, unbelievable, and since Scott Hall moved in with Diamond Dallas Page, he has been sober as well, and it just needs to keep going, and he really desperately needs this hip surgery. So if you go to the Facebook page, and shortly, I'm going to post the link to the video. If you haven't seen it, I'm going to be posting it within the next 15 minutes. Go check out the video. I'm going to put the link up to the Amazon store where you can buy something, whatever you want. A portion of the purchase is going to go directly to Scott Hall, or you can just donate on your own. I'll put the link up to the Scott Hall campaign as well. So we're going to try to do what we can, the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network, Team PWT, to help Scott Hall out and to get the bad guy back on track. Who knows? Maybe we could see him back in the ring someday. But for Mike Bucci, thank you so much for the interview. I can't express how much that means to me. He's a great guy. He usually doesn't do online interviews with other people besides certain guys out there. But thank him. Make sure if you're in the area, check him out WrestleMania weekend at Pro Wrestling Syndicate and at WrestleCon. Next week on the show, we'll have Pro Wrestling Syndicate promoter and booker, Mr. Eric Pleska, and he's going to be shooting about a lot of stuff on the independent wrestling scene tomorrow night on the PWP Radio Network right here, folks. A brand new, fresh, live interview with the Shockmaster, Fred Ottman. Definitely check that out. It's going to be an awesome interview. So for Will T.O.B. Macedas, John DiMaselli, and my man Toph, this is Jersey Strong J signing out for the night. PWP Radio, keep it real.